The Month in Review. What mattered most to you? It has been more than 3 weeks since the November election, yet the race for the 2nd Congressional District remains in the news as Congressman Bruce Poliquin is asking for a recount in that election. He has also filed suit to challenge Maine's ranked choice voting system. Meantime, the declared winner in the race, Jared Golden, is in Washington, working to hire a staff and learn the ropes of Congress. Both houses of Maine's legislature and the governor's office will be held by the same party for the first time in a long time. And Maine has elected its first female governor. And that's just some of the political news from the month. I'm Jennifer Rooks. What are you talking about this November? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Congressman Bruce Poliquin appears to be using every means available to him to contest the outcome of Maine's 2nd Congressional District vote. Janet Mills won the race for governor by a margin not many saw coming. Congresswoman Pingree and Senator King easily won re-election. And the makeup of the Maine legislature will include more women than ever before. These are just a few of the topics we'll cover today. Well, who am I kidding? I doubt we'll even cover all of those in today's Month in Review. With me in our studio, Ben Bragdon, editorial page editor for the Kennebec Journal and Morning Sentinel. Greg Kessich, editorial page editor for the Portland Press Herald and Maine Sunday Telegram. And joining us from our Bangor studio, Susan Young, editorial page editor for the Bangor Daily News. And as always, we want to hear from you. What are you still thinking and talking about from the month of November? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Obviously, the big story of the month, the election. Greg Kessich, as you 3 weeks out, as you look back at the election, as you think about the stories that have unfolded since, what is the big takeaway for you?
Well, there's so many threads. I think the Janet Mills' election for a number of reasons, but among them is the support for an experienced government person. During the primary, if you'll remember, a lot of Democrats were saying Janet Mills will be really easy to attack because she's too tied in with the past. The Democratic Party has been part of this fight with LePage, and she's really symbolizes that. We've had the experience of seeing Hillary Clinton lose against a much less experienced man back in 2010. Libby Mitchell lost to a much less experienced person, and in both cases, their experience in government was considered a negative. And she won handily. She really, I think, did very well in the debates, and just in general got stronger as the campaign went on. And I'm wondering if that's a shift in perception about what people think about what government should be able to do.
And also the analogies you brought up between whether it's Libby Mitchell or about Hillary Clinton, not only both experienced, but both women.
Yes, they are. Yes, they're both. She's the first woman to be elected governor. She is the first Democratic woman to be elected statewide. So, yes, it was a huge milestone. But
Susan, what about you? What of all the threads and all the stories coming out of this election are you thinking will go down in the history books?
Oh, obviously the 2nd Congressional District race with Bruce Poliquin's legal challenge to ranked choice voting, his request for a new election, his recount. We knew that ranked choice voting might have some unintended or unexpected consequences, but to have a race with so much turmoil, for lack of a better word, after the fact. I mean, I think we all believe, especially given what Judge Walker has already said, that Bruce is unlikely to prevail in his court case. And, he wasn't that close in the vote count. So a recount's not going to change the outcome. It's just going to delay the inevitable. But because Maine's the first state to use ranked choice voting in a congressional race, we're obviously getting a lot of national attention. And the fact that there's so much consternation and, frankly, hyperbole about the integrity of our election system, it's going to be something we're talking about for a long time.
All right, Ben, your turn.
Well, kind of looking at it from a kind of a big picture scenario, I think really the kind of widespread victory by the Democrats in Maine this time around, I guess that's probably not much of a surprise given that, you know, we're coming off of 8 years of Governor LePage and largely Republican rule, and we're 2 years into a Republican president, which usually results in a Democratic swing. But, you know, the Republicans lost... they lost the governorship pretty handily. They took back the state Senate, and they extended their lead in the House of Representatives, and they took back the second district. It was a pretty resounding victory for Democrats. Not only that, they've kind of left the Republicans without a whole lot of leadership. You know, Ken Fredette was the Speaker of the House, and he termed out and didn't run again. Paula Page is, of course, done, and... Amy Volk in Scarborough, who would have been Senate president, they had, you know, she lost her race. Ellie Espling, who is another leader in the House, that she lost her Senate race. They don't really have a whole lot of big names left in their leadership, and they're kind of left to pick up the pieces now and see where they're going to go forward. And the Democrats on the other side have a lot of power for the next 2 years and have to decide how they're going to wield it. So those will probably be the two big, you know, state house stories moving forward.
Okay, Susan, I think Medicaid expansion is probably the first way we're going to see a difference with this Democratic majority. What else are you, if you want to speak more about Medicaid expansion, but also what else are you looking to see happen right away?
I mean, of course, with Medicaid expansion, it's just the end of opposition to something that the people of Maine said they wanted, the court said needed to be done after that referendum. So, you know, it's simply just following the law at this point, which shouldn't be astounding. But of course, that will be a change. I mean, I think obviously there's going to be a change in attitude around so many things. I just saw a press release that the Lands for Maine Future program is soliciting proposals. You know, it's been a long time since they had the funds to fund projects for land conservation because the governor wouldn't issue the bonds. Same thing with housing, senior housing bonds. It's just going to be a change in attitude, I think, is the biggest difference, you know, in terms of taxes, what the priorities are, how DHHS is run. It's hard to know, you know, what's going to happen immediately, but definitely going to be a different focus than we've seen for the last 8 years.
Ben, speaking of Medicaid expansion, your paper wrote an editorial recently. what is Governor LePage doing exactly and why?
Well, he doesn't like Medicaid expansion. He spent a lot of time getting, from his perspective, spent a lot of time getting the state's finances in order, and he thinks that doing it here is going to reverse all that. No amount of, you know, ballot referendums or elections will stop him, apparently. So he is going to do what he can to stop this until his last day in office.
So this last move is really just to delay it until January 2nd?
Yes. Yes, I think so. You know, if that way, you know, he can say that he did everything that he could do. And everyone will say that because it's clear he's done absolutely everything he can to stop this law from going through with the election of Janet Mills there's just no way to stop it now. And there was probably no way to stop it before. But it's, you know, really going forward now, and he's just going to fight it till the very last.
Greg, before we move on to ranked choice voting, Susan, jump in. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, if we take him at his word that he doesn't believe that Medicaid expansion is financially stable, then it's wise of him to, you know, oppose it to the last minute. So when it is implemented and if it does go badly in terms of finances, he can say, see, I told you. And I didn't do it. I didn't create this problem.
So it's about legacy.
He's threatening to come back to Maine and run for governor again if it happens. You know, yes, he has the right to do that. He's now he's in, you know, a judge is ordering him to do it, and he's, you know, appealing that. So I guess he has a right to appeal a decision he disagrees with. But, you know, he knows that when January 2nd rolls around, it's she's going to sign. She's going to instruct the department to go ahead and engage with the federal government to access that money and insure those people. And the Judge Murphy made it retroactive to last summer, to July. I mean, to this summer, so till July. So, if somebody who was denied insurance during that period, you know, got sick, they're retroactively covered.
Wow. Let's talk about ranked choice voting, because as we mentioned already, that this is in the courts. Bruce Poliquin is challenging not just the outcome of the election and asking for a recount, but also challenging ranked choice voting on constitutional grounds. Even if Judge Walker rules against him, can he appeal this all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court?
Yes.
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 And is that likely?
Yes.
Yes.
Why
yes.
not? Why,
yeah, I mean,
why,
well, it'll be up to the Supreme Court to take it or not.
Yeah.
From everything that we've said and that has been reported, there isn't much of a legal argument here. And the court may see that and keep, you know, whatever, you know. We'll see how Judge Walker rules. But if an appeal going forward, I would think that that what we've seen so far from Judge Walker and from other legal experts would weigh heavily on the Supreme Court taking it. But, yeah, sure, he could take this all the way to the top. I don't know where that leaves us with the start of the session in Congress. But
well, the House gets to decide who they'll seat. And with the Democrats in charge, they'll seat Jared Golden.
I did see a tweet right before we came in here from a national reporter who said that after the House adjourned today, about 15 minutes after the room had cleared, Bruce Poliquin was still sitting there in the House by himself, kind of taking it all in, is what the tweet said. So I can't imagine what's going through his mind at that point.
All right. Well, if you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Susan, what kind of governor do you expect Janet Mills to be?
Certainly much more collaborative than Governor LePage has been. I think Democrats might be a little disappointed that she's more conservative than they would like. You know, she's made it clear what her priorities are. But I think one thing that Democrats need to be aware of as they control the governorship and both houses of the legislature is overreach. I mean, we saw the Republicans when they were swept in 2010. You know, did some things that people liked and some things that people didn't like, and their majority was kind of short-lived. So I think there's a cautionary tale for Democrats to not fulfill a progressive wish list too quickly or perhaps at all if they hope to retain their leadership for longer than a couple years.
Okay, and I'm going to return the question I asked you earlier to Greg and Ben, posed the same question. Outside of Medicaid expansion, and Susan Young mentioned the land for Maine's future bonds. Greg, what else are you keeping your eye on? What do you want to see if the legislature maybe tackles again something that was vetoed by Governor LePage?
Well, certainly the alternative energy space. There has been a number of solar bills that fell just short of overriding a veto. I would expect to see some version of that coming forward, probably the 2016 compromise that created a whole new system for compensating solar customers who produce energy. I think that's an area. I think I agree with what Susan just said about the pressure on Janet Mills is going to be probably less from Republicans than from within the Democratic caucus. There's a lot of pent-up demand among Democrats who, under Paula Page, did not see any, you know, couldn't get anything through except by referendum. And and Janet Mills is you know, said a lot of things that are very fiscally conservative. She says she won't raise taxes.
I think she says she won't raise taxes on the middle class.
Right. Okay. All right. So that's but and then we will get to decide who's middle class.
Right. You know, it's, well, a lot isn't of times, that always the question?
I always hear $250,000 a year is in the middle class. Really? Okay. But so I think there's going to be pressure on her. And then I think, you know, it's not out of line to expect that there might be a recession in the next 4 years. We're already seeing some, you know, troubling signs like the GM plant closures that indicate that this historically long economic expansion is coming to an end. And, you know, if you've been through, if been in the state house when one of those things happens, the everybody's agenda goes out the window.
Ben?
Yeah, I would think that would be on everybody's mind is what happens when this kind of slows down. I mean, besides the big picture items like Medicaid expansion and clean energy, certainly, you know, preparing for that. And also, like Greg and Susan said, is kind of managing the caucus from the left. I've heard of people wanting to bring minimum wage back up and actually increase it even further. When you know, keeping it where it was, keeping the increases where it was a huge fight in the last session. Or things like paid family leave, maybe a statewide law for that. These kind of progressive initiatives that you know, that in the last 8 years would have gone to the ballot, because what's the point of trying to get it through the legislature? Now going to try to go through the legislature and trying to you know, it's a big tent Democratic Party there, and trying to control that far left group to. You know, to try not to bite off too much at the beginning.
What about education funding? Do you think they'll return to that, or do you think they feel as though in the last...
Well, they have to... That was a one-time funding. That increase was kind of a one-time thing, and they're going to have to maintain that. So that's, I mean, this budget is not going to be simple. You're going to have to maintain that education funding. You're going to have to pay for Medicaid expansion. And that's only the top, you know, top one or two or three items. You know, people have a long wish list after 8 years of relative austerity. So I don't know how the numbers are going to work out, but I think that I would expect that this budget is going to be a much more collaborative experience than before. Yeah. I would think Janet Mills will bring in the Republicans, and they'll come up with something that you know, that everybody hates, which is usually the, you know, sign of a pretty good budget.
You know, we haven't seen a regular budget process since 2011, because you know, LePage's budgets were kind of rhetorical, and he didn't negotiate over them, and they all got hashed out in the back rooms. So there's a lot of people in Augusta who have never experienced a regular budget process.
Yeah, not only the budget process, the legislative process, right? Yeah. I mean, the governor liked to throw bills out, and he liked to veto bills, but everything in between, you know, he was never involved in. And so, you know, when you put forward a proposal, and then you got to sit with the committees and talk to them and figure out, so that by the time the legislation comes out the other end, it's something that everyone can agree on. It'll be nice to see that process, hopefully, you know, kind of come back. And it seems like the Republicans have some, you know, pragmatic leaders, and Janet Mills is certainly pragmatic.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does the Lunder Foundation, founding partner of Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Classical.
In Tune Saturday night. Wait, what? That's right, In Tune Saturday Night. I'm Sarah Willis, and we're moving this week to Saturday night at 8, following live from here. Join us for the usual mix of old, new, and everything in between. That's Saturday night at 8, here on Maine Public Radio.
If you love public broadcasting and have experience with philanthropic giving, Maine Public may have a position open that may be of interest to you. We're seeking a full-time major gifts researcher and coordinator to join our team, working to ensure a sustainable future for this valued service. If you or someone you know might want more information, please visit mainpublic.org and click on About and then Careers. Thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the news that made Maine headlines in November. Joining me, our panel of editorial page editors, Susan Young with the Bangor Daily News, Ben Bragdon with the Kennebec Journal and Morning Sentinel, and Greg Kessich with the Portland Press Herald and Maine Sunday Telegram. We invite you to join the conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll start with Jason calling from Belfast. Hi, Jason. Go ahead.
Just curious, as far as the ranked choice voting goes, if there's any talk about expanding that to, like, the governor's or state offices.
Sure. There's a lot of talk about it. Ben, to expand this to state offices, mm-hmm. we'd need a constitutional amendment, correct?
Right. Yeah.
And for a constitutional amendment, we have to have it pass the legislature by a 2/3 margin, or is it?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, and then it goes out to voters.
Okay.
Right?
So what are the chances of that happening?
I would say not good. I don't think they have the majority needed. And I also would... politically would wonder if after this Pollock and Golden mess, if that's the right thing to do in some of these kind of purple swing districts. I don't know if that's out there for a fight. I don't know. I don't get a sense of it.
During the campaign, Janet Mills said she would draft a constitutional amendment that would fix the problem. But I don't think if somehow this has become a partisan issue, it doesn't. It's funny because the people who are really driving it are independents. If you look at the campaign for ranked choice voting, they're out of it's certainly not the big wigs of either party, and a lot of Democrats don't like it either. They prefer the system where they just find their votes and turn them out, and they don't like having to share the stage with independents. But somehow this has become a partisan issue, and the Democrats don't have the muscle right now. I think as long as it's in the courts, I don't think there'll be any action in terms of expanding it.
Okay, Susan, anything to add?
Let's remember, that Republicans are talking about a referendum to repeal it, and they do have a petition that's being circulated, not a signature gathering petition, but just a petition for folks to sign on and say they oppose ranked choice voting and they want it repealed. We'll see where that goes. But as Greg said, it has become a very partisan issue. And the Republicans are doing what they can, not just to undermine ranked choice voting, but to get people to question the integrity of our election system as a whole. So stay tuned.
Yeah, and we're on the leading edge of this thing. Everyone knows this was the first federal race to use it, but it's used very sparingly across the country. That's why everyone nationwide is looking at Maine right now. And that's the other outcome of this court case, is that we're gonna get a decision on whether ranked choice voting is constitutional, and that'll kind of settle that for the most part. And then you have groups across the country who are trying to implement this. I don't know if Maine's process is showing other people how to do it, something you want to hold up. The process itself has worked well, but everything that comes with it, who knows if other people want to go along with that after all this mess. But it's certainly something that everybody's watching and that we'll see in the next couple of years kind of spread westward.
And to your point, Susan, we have Monica on Facebook who writes, regarding Poliquin, this feels like part of a coordinated effort by Republicans to sow doubt about the election process. If you want to know about the integrity of elections, ask the hundreds of election clerks around the state, most of them middle-aged ladies who protect the process like mama bears. Poliquin is embarrassing himself and his state. What happened to the Republicans I grew up with? So that's Monica on Facebook. And Skip in Stonington also want to talk about the election and the recount. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I'd like to suggest that the blue wave in Maine was the result of two forces. One, I think there is probably a lot of dissatisfaction on the federal level with the president. And I think people had enough of the contentious government with Governor LePage and also Representative Fedette the past 8 years, and Now we'll see whether Democrats have got the wisdom to really move the state forward. I'd like to say a second thing. I was involved in a recount yesterday for the Hancock County Judge of Probate. In Augusta, under the direction of Julie Flynn, the Bureau of Elections, and I was never so proud about being a Mainer as I was yesterday. This thing went as smoothly as it could have gone. The recount actually took place over 2 days. There were 28,000 votes in this election, and the difference was 57 votes. So we see how important it is, how important one vote is. And the recount still had William Blaisdell as the elected judge of probate, but Lynn Williams gained 32 votes in the process. But the whole process was absolutely nonpartisan. There wasn't an utter of a partisan word. There were six teams of people that worked together, and Julie's staff was just absolutely wonderful. They knew exactly what to do. They answered all kinds of questions from people. And, you know, when I see what goes on in Florida and Georgia and North Dakota and other states, I'm so proud of our Maine legislature and our Bureau of Elections, and as you just said, all of the town clerks of the state of Maine for this wonderful election process that we have in the state of Maine.
Thank you, Skip. Yeah.
So, you know, when they talk about, I agree with a lot of what Skip just said. I mean, when they talk about reforming the election process and bringing standards up to a point where people can have confidence in them, they talk about introducing standards that we already have in Maine. Paper ballots, you know, transparent recounts, and it's true. Our elections are, you know, it may not be the most exciting place in the world, but our elections are conducted in a very businesslike way. And when there's a recount, you don't see big swings, and you don't see any of the kind of things that that Poliquin and the Republicans have been alleging took place in this. And it's I think a very dangerous step to take, because they're causing people to lose faith in that their vote will be counted fairly, and there's no evidence that their vote isn't counted fairly.
Skip, thanks for your call. We'll move up to Sydney and Joe. Hi, Joe. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Hey, the reason that I was calling was I noticed they had on some folks from, I think it was the Portland Press Herald, the Kennebec Journal, and maybe even the Bangor Daily News. And I get on a daily basis, and I like to scan through the different articles. I like to look at the opinions. And, you know, I come from a conservative bent, so I'll be right up front with you. But I'd like to see more articles, and I think it would help the readership. It would grow the readership if there were more pros and cons articles done by the pro side and the con side. Whether the newspaper editors agree with it or not, put that on. Let the Maine people decide. I think you guys are doing a really good job. You're not like the liberal press. You're not like Fox, CNN, who are biased on both sides. And I appreciate that. But just a little bit more of those, if you wouldn't mind.
Well,
and I like what the – oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. I was going to say thank you, but finish what you're going to say, Joe.
The last thing I was going to say was I liked the last call by the gentleman who said, now he sounded like maybe he was more on the other side, but he said, it's time for the Democrats, and I'm not going to quote him, but this is what I got out of it. They got to put up or shut up. But, you know, pull through. I may be a Republican, but I'm rooting for them. I'm rooting for all of them.
Joe, I've got a question for you on behalf of the newspaper editors in the studio with me. I want to ask you, do you read your newspaper the old-fashioned way, holding it in your hand over the coffee table, or do you read it on a computer?
No, I read it on a computer.
Okay.
I love the computer. Yeah, I love it. And you got to watch me. I'm crafty like a lot of us people. I'll be right up front. I get so many articles, and it gets up to 10, and it's like, oh, you can't read it.
Don't tell them how you do it, Joe.
Yeah.
Let's keep this as our little secret.
So, Joe, thank you. And so a nice suggestion from Joe to maybe you guys probably, I'm guessing, you know, you're thinking about representing different opinions on the opinion page, but maybe even be, Joe, are you, I think I'm saying what you're saying, be more explicit about it. Say this one came in on this side, this one came on the other side, and put them side by side.
Yeah.
You know, they don't always come in on the same day.
Right.
And it's part of the problem. But I think the, you know, your question really points to a problem that we have not really dealt with very well, which is that people read differently on the computer than they do when they're holding the paper in their hands. And when they hold the paper in their hands, opinion is in a special section and they know exactly what it is. But on the computer, everything is kind of a free agent. And a lot of times people will misread something we've written as a news story. So I think we need to do a better job of, you know, sort of identifying what we're doing.
That's why I asked. A tweet. The only way for Bruce Poliquin to actually get another vote held is for a judge to declare RCV invalid. Correct, Susan? Is that right? The only way we're going to get this revote that we're hearing about that Bruce Poliquin wants is if RCV gets thrown out, ranked choice voting?
They could throw out the results of the election, too. But I mean, that's an extreme long shot. They would have to find something fundamentally wrong with how we voted, how the votes were tallied. Just extremely unlikely.
OK.
Yeah, I don't think it's it maybe only happened once before. And it was when both sides, things got so I think it might have been in Florida, which wouldn't be a surprise. But an election just got so screwed up with fraudulent ballots and on both sides that both sides just said, let's just try it again. And they did it. And otherwise than that, I don't think it's ever happened before have a new election. That's the definition of a Hail Mary, I would say.
And there is another election in 2 years, so he will have another opportunity.
Well, that's kind of the interesting part, right? I mean, why not, when it's this close, some people would say, just say, well, I lost this one, I'll be back in 2 years. It'll be a presidential year with Donald Trump. He will be in the second district. I know Bruce Poliquin has kind of kept the president at arm's length and really rarely mentioned his name. But it's it was a, you know, a different electorate this year than it was 2 years ago in the second district, which, you know, points to this being bigger than Bruce Poliquin. This is a Republican Party that's scared of ranked choice voting and scared of having that, you know, can the next Paula Page get elected under ranked choice voting? Probably not. So they're looking at that and say, you know, unless we're going to run Peter Mills every 4 years, maybe we can't win under ranked choice voting. And all these people that are fighting it in the party are LePage guys, and they're from that wing of the party. You know, that seems to be what's going on here.
We'll go to Clayton.
I agree with what Ben says. I just wanted to add, in terms of a revote or changing the election results, Judge Walker, in his decision denying the request for a temporary restraining order, made it clear that he had a real problem thinking about nullifying the election results, because that would disenfranchise all the people who voted for Jared Gold and Tiffany Bond and Will Hoare. I mean, Bruce Poliquin, as we said, has very clearly made this about himself and his supporters, and they may feel, some of them, that they were somehow disenfranchised. But the judge made it very clear that he's not going to disenfranchise voters who picked other candidates, because that could, in fact, violate their due process.
And what a precedent that would send, right? I mean, every close loser across the country would just say new election, you know, that November vote would just be the start.
Clayton and Dexter, go ahead.
Yeah, I think Bruce brought up the fact that voters in CD2 did not want ranked choice voting, and kind of the voters in CD1 kind of pushed it through. It just kind of foxes that whole two different mains kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Do you see that type of discussion continuing? Are those complaints escalating? And do you ever see anything come of it, as far as, you know, the difference in opinions between Central and Northern Maine and Southern Maine?
Sure.
I think there's more Republicans in, by concentration, by percentage, in CD2. And I think, the fact that they turned down the referendum both times is interesting, but it's not really significant in that it was a statewide election. Paul LePage, I think, lost the first district both times, would have lost. I'm pretty sure he did, and yet he's still governor of the state. I mean, it's just we only have those districts for Congress. Mm-hmm. But I think the point, you know, he's making, there is a narrative that these kind of know-it-alls down in southern Maine are pushing these ideas on us that we don't like. And I don't really know how to I think somebody in the second district, like somebody like Jared Golden, could lead the charge and say there's nothing wrong with this system. It's nothing cheating about it. It's a perfectly honest way of trying to decide what we had here, a very, very close election. Mm. You know, do you decide it with a minority winner? Or do you try to see, if there's any kind of consolidation, any kind of coalition building among the candidates? And that's how this one was decided.
And what Clayton's talking about is actually happening all over the country, where cities are getting younger and bigger and bluer, mm-hmm. and rural areas are getting redder and older and more white. And it's always been a difference, but it's becoming more and more stark difference. We saw it in this election, particularly, and needling at that difference can be really destructive. We've always had this two Maines narrative in Maine, and it's true that there are different conditions in northern Maine than there are in southern Maine. But when it comes down to it, we're all one state, and we need to solve these problems together. And by saying, hey, those guys down in Portland are screwing up your state over and over again, is just really unproductive. And it's not what statewide leaders should be doing here. They really, at some point you have to draw a line and say, we're a state together, and we can't just break it up as we see fit and kind of balkanize the whole of Maine. And, you know, some of them go with Canada and some of them go with Boston and some of them go off on their own. I mean, you know... where does that go?
I would say totally amen to what Ben said. And, you know, as kind of the representative from northern Maine,
it's what's it really like up there?
Yeah, it's really counterproductive to, as Greg said, to constantly complain about the people southern Maine. Without the Portland area, the state would be in really tough shape, because let's not forget, Portland generates the bulk of our economic activity. So as much as, you know, there are these tensions, as Ben said, in states across the country, are there two Maines? Are there eight Maines? Are there 16 Maines? You know, there's things we disagree about, but we are one state and we all need to work together to solve some of the really big problems we're facing, like a lack of trained workforce. You know, we don't have enough people here. So whether they live in southern Maine or northern Maine, there's a lot of issues that we all need to work on together. And that's much more helpful than continuing to talk about our differences.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
We had an interesting thing when we had the three Senate candidates. Do I have a second? Angus King said something like, you know, people in greater Portland are doing fine, but I'm worried about the rest of the state. And Zach Ringelstein, the Democrat who was running against him, said, no, not everybody is doing fine. There are these deep pockets of poverty. There are people who can't afford to buy a house. There are people who are living on the street. There's drug addiction, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So I think our problems are more widespread. They're not just geographic. I guess that would be my answer.
Yeah. Well, speaking of what Maine, I want to give everybody an update on the Made in Maine gift guide, the Maine Calling Made in Maine gift guide. Our executive producer, Jonathan Smith, is putting the final touches on the guide and hopes to have it on our website and Facebook later today. It is really impressive to see amazing Made in Maine products from every corner of the state. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Otelco, formerly OTT Communications. From phones to fiber, serving Maine businesses for more than a century. Otelco.com. And the Jackson Laboratory, nonprofit genetics research in Bar Harbor, discovering precise genomic solutions to disease. JAX.org.
What does the arrival of the emerald ash borer in Maine mean for the people of the Penobscot Nation?
You never can accept the death of something that's so ancient and so culturally appropriate in our daily lives.
On Next from the New England News Collaborative, we'll discuss the significance of the ash tree. And we'll hear from entrepreneurs turning kombucha into vodka.
I confess we're still tinkering with it.
Please join us.
Next is coming up today at 2 on Maine Public Radio.
So the story of David and Goliath. Improbable underdog defeats the powerful favorite, right? Maybe not.
Goliath is a sitting duck. He doesn't have a chance. So why do we keep calling David an underdog?
I'm Guy Raz. Things you thought you knew that are wrong. On the next TED Radio Hour from NPR.
You can hear the TED Radio Hour tomorrow afternoon at 1 and Wednesday evening at 11 on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the news of the month. And this month, we're talking politics. My guests are editorial page editors Greg Kessich with the Portland Press Herald and Maine Sunday Telegram, Susan Young with the Bangor Daily News, and Ben Bragdon with the Kennebec Journal and Morning Sentinel. Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Before we get back to politics, though, Ben, I have a question to ask you. I saw you tweeting something negative about the Grinch. What do you have against the Grinch?
I don't have anything against the Grinch. The Grinch is my favorite holiday show. It may be one of my favorite movies of all time. It is absolutely perfect. It is a perfect book. It is a perfect movie. What I have a problem with is as soon as it gets cold, and I guess they waited till a couple days after Thanksgiving this time, news organizations across the country apply the Grinch name to every time someone steals something. And they, a Grinch took this from this and a Grinch took this from this. And it's just too much. It's too much.
Susan, Greg, either one of you guys have a similar pet peeve?
Are either one
of you going to be a Grinch today on Maine Calling? Go ahead.
Ours is Christmas came early.
Yeah, right.
Actually, that one starts in like October when anything positive or unexpected happens for someone. Yeah. Christmas came early.
For me, it's...
But I like the Grinch one better.
For me, it's especially at the holidays.
Yes.
A safe fell on her head. It's hard any time of year, but especially at the holidays.
Yeah, it's one thing to be lonely and hungry and sick in July.
Sure.
But it's just so bad when it happens at Christmas.
Okay, we're going to go back to serious political reporting now. An email from Ben. What can we expect to see from Susan Collins now that the state of Maine has majority Democratic representation against the House, State Senate, and governorship?
Well, what we have seen is that she's become more conservative. Don't know if that's going to change. The big expectation is that she's worried about a primary challenger in 2020. So she's going to stay on the conservative side for a while. But, we've seen with Judge Farr, she doesn't seem to be inclined to be the moderate, tiebreaker leaning with the Democrats or the more moderate Republicans. So it's a very interesting situation to keep an eye on.
You know, it's interesting. In 2016, she published an op-ed in the Washington Post where she said Donald Trump is unfit for office and that she would not vote for him. And when she was asked a couple of weeks ago, she said, I don't know yet. Either he's become more fit or something's going on. But I think because the Republicans picked up two seats in the Senate, there's a little bit more leeway. Not every vote is so make or break we may see her, voting more moderately as election time comes forward. I think the downside for her will be that because there's two extra seats, the attention, the microscope won't be there. So that's both a negative because she could vote with Democrats on some issue of very, of importance to people back here. And people will say, well, that was a wasted. That was a vote they had to spend. So I think I'm sure in many ways they'll appreciate not having such a tight microscope on them because it's been relentless for 2 years. But it's going to be it'll be interesting. We'll see how it works out.
Yeah, and she keeps you know saying that she's concerned about the Mueller investigation and about what's going to happen to her. She said again yesterday when Michael Cohen pleaded guilty, and there was a whole, you know, confirmed a bunch of what kind of we already knew about Trump's relationship with Russia. She won't back the bill to protect the investigation. She says she doesn't think it's needed. Well, it's not needed until it is. So I guess she's just going to hope that that Trump doesn't do anything. And if he does, then she'll be part of a pretty big group of Republicans who step up to do whatever they can at that point. But the fact that she's not backing that bill is, you know, probably, you know, an example of her kind of, you know, treading lightly around the president.
Nancy on Facebook, what matters most to me and my friends is the possibility that we will be able to address meaningful climate change solutions in a split-party U.S. Congress and here in Maine with a more environment-friendly legislature. Let's get some stuff done. Our future depends on it. Greg, you mentioned possibly some alternative energy bills being able to get through the legislature this session.
I think also on the statewide level, a lot of what needs to be done around climate change is planning for adapting to the effects, which is something that we have lost 8 years on under Governor LePage. Federally, you know, I keep hearing things like, well, we've got to turn the whole world's economy on a dime. And I just have trouble imagining that happening. You know, these reports get more and more specific every few months, and they get, you know, the outcomes are really dire, but it's hard to get, hard to imagine a consensus forming among the people who are currently elected to Congress.
Wayne on Facebook, I am surprised that no one has noted that Mills is the first non-incumbent to win a clear majority since 1966. A couple of incumbents, but no first-termers. That's a pretty strong message to Maine Republicans.
Is that true?
That is true.
That's true. Well, yeah. I mean, you know, these polls kept coming out before showing her with an 8-10 point lead, and I didn't believe them, and no one I talked to believed them. And they were right.
Yeah.
And it was a resounding victory. It wasn't only a, you know, a 3% victory that we call, a clear. It was, you know, it was a resounding victory, and that's that's true. We should point it out.
Can we say this was a great year for polls? They were they were like super accurate.
Yeah.
After 2016, they were like, you know, really right on the mark.
And they weren't really that far off in 2016.
Right.
I think some of the regional ones were off a little bit, but overall they got kind of things right. Just people were upset because they you can't understand what it means when you say someone has a 75% chance of winning.
Right.
You know, that 25% happens quite a bit. Right?
Sure, and some political scientists I know say, you know, almost every race was within the margin of error
right.
on these polls. It's just that they were so close in such important districts.
Right, and then if you have three states and they're not independent, you know,
yeah.
if one goes to Trump, they all are probably going to go to Trump, and that's what happened. So.
We'll go to Katie calling from Newcastle. Hi, Katie, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I'd like to add that I think that Mr. Poliquin's post-election litigiousness stems from his and many of his fellow Republicans' disrespect of the electorate here in Maine. It's not just the referendum on ranked choice voting, but on Maine Medicare and minimum wage. We've heard a lot, we've had a lot of pushback, and I hope with the new people directing the legislature and the whole government here in Maine that we'll have a more respectful and convenient for all the people of Maine existence. And in briefly, just concerning the climate change and alternative energy needs, here in Damariscotta at Skidunfle Library, we just aired the Third Industrial Revolution by Jeremy Briskin's work concerning those issues. And on the 11th of December, we'll have some local legislators here for a discussion of proposed comprehensive energy plan for Maine, because we certainly do lack one. Thank you.
Thank you, Katie, for your call.
You're welcome.
And she's connecting Bruce Poliquin's candidacy and his service in Congress to, you know, just a general pushback by Republican legislators, but also Democratic legislators on the referendum questions, I think, that Maine voters are passing.
Sure. I mean, there's always going to be a tension between laws that are passed by the voters that go around the legislative process, but and the people who are elected to make those decisions that they feel like they really should be doing it. You know, we say, oh, they didn't deal with any of these issues for all these years. And they say, we did deal with them. We chose not to do anything about them. And so that's always going to be somewhat of a tension. But, you know, it is a kind of win it all cost mentality. Yeah. And everybody is, you know, got to be careful of that.
Okay, I've got to wrap it up. That's Greg Kesich, editorial page editor for the Portland Press Herald and Maine Sunday Telegram. Also here, Susan Young, editorial page editor for Bangor Daily News, and Ben Bragdon, editorial page editor for the Kennebec Journal and Morning Sentinel. Check out our Facebook page and Greg Kesich's Desert Island Disc. Lucy Suchak ran the board today. Additional help from Sandra Harris and Rich Tozier in Bangor. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.